Welcome to Trust the Journey. I'm Melanie Curtis.
And I'm Jason Maletsky.
Thank you, legit, for joining us today.
Now, our mission is living and learning, laughing and loving together with you.
We're here to grow and contribute through our practice of openness, honesty, vulnerability, humility, and trust, trusting the entire journey.
Yeah, and on that journey, we often talk about plant medicines, psychedelics, and other avenues of healing. When we do, we are sharing for informational purposes only. We're not doctors or therapists, and we don't promote doing anything illegal.
Inside us all, we have a deep, powerful knowing. We encourage curiosity, healing, and exploration of this consciousness.
Damn straight. Together, our handle is trustthejourney.today. Individually, you can find her at melaniecurtis.com and me at jasonmaletsky.com.
Thank you all again so much for being with us. On to the show. Okay.
Here we go.
Here we go.
Welcome back.
Today we're doing a bit of reflection on our numbers as a show. And from those numbers, we are going to do a therapy sesh, because who doesn't always need or could benefit from a therapy sesh? I know I can, so I'm pretty fired up.
This guy. This guy could use some therapy, let me tell you what.
Let's do this.
I was listening to another podcast. I can't remember which one it was off the top of my head just recently, but it was like the guy's like, he's like, top five things you should do in your life. You know, he's like, get therapy. just get over it. He's like, just get therapy. Because once you do it, you'll be like, oh yeah, I didn't realize I needed that.
Get therapy. Totally.
Yeah.
Totally. Yeah. Oh my God. I'm actually totally looking for a new therapist because I just want to have another person on my support team right now. I feel great about, you know, my insurance covers it. I might as well take advantage of it. You know what I mean? There's no reason not to. I am cool with going in and out, you know, if I'm feeling like I'm not resonating with the particular therapist anymore and moving on and getting a new person. So I'm kind of doing that. I haven't found the person yet, but I'm in that process and I feel good about it. And I'm looking forward, honestly, to having that extra teammate.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally. I did a round recently where I did IFS, the Internal Family Systems therapy, and I did about a dozen sessions on a regular, kind of a short time, like weekly, for about 3 months to really dive into that modality of therapy and kind of try it out for a bit. You know, I was like, I'm going to dive in. I'm going to go once a week on Thursdays, and I'm going to go and have this teammate who I'm going to relate to and share all the things that are going on, because I was working through a challenging time and I really could use some support. And it was great. I only did it for 3 months for two reasons. One, I felt like I got a good amount out of it and I could kind of just take it out of gear for a minute. And that, like, that had been enough for that quarter, essentially. And the other one was, yeah, it was kind of expensive to go that regularly and really be applying myself at that tenacity. But right now, actually, this week, I'm feeling like maybe I'm going to go back for a couple of touch-ups, you know, like I'll do once a month for the next couple months kind of thing, to like at least have somebody to kind of follow up on where we left off and see how do things look now that I've done some work around those topics I was talking about before.
Totally.
And somebody who actually knows my story, right? Somebody who can say, yeah, how is that working out for you? How did that go? You know, how are things working now?
Yeah, touch-ups are great. Or just simply looking for a different cadence or frequency that might work better, right? How you're saying I went once a week, that's pretty hefty cadence. And it's a great cadence when you're doing the work and you're crushing it and you're going for it and you really need extra support. That's awesome. And then other times, maybe you meet with your therapist every other week or once a month, or depending on the current phase of your life or your level of need. None of it is right or wrong. Some people meet with a therapist twice a week, you know, or more, with more frequency. And so it's really based on whatever is right for you. So anyway, I just want to say that out loud because I think it's great. And sometimes I think when people start doing therapy and they have a certain cadence that they start with, they can think that, and I say this because of myself, like you can think that that is what you have to do. That's how it's done, quote unquote, versus being like, oh no, it can be customized to your needs based on where you're at.
Yeah, I've always worked with my therapist to say, how often do you feel like it should be coming based on like, they're professionals. They're professionals. I can be like, based on the anxiety level that you're seeing from me right now, how often do you think I should be talking
right.
to you?
Totally. You
know? I think we should meet every week for the next month, maybe.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, totally.
And then we'll pull it back to like every 2 weeks, you know?
Well, before we dive into our own therapy with each other, which I love, I would love, because team, fam, those of you listening, Jay was just sharing with me about the numbers. He's very much on top of our numbers. He tracks that stuff for us, which I love. I'm very grateful for his effort to do that. And there's so much insight in the data. And so we would love to share that a little bit, just a little window into that with you and how it motivated today's conversation.
Well, yeah, I mean, we were trying to pick out a topic where we're like, okay, we don't have a guest slot scheduled. We've got a free recording block. What do we want to talk about? We've got a long list that we keep running, but I'm like, one of the things that I've learned in my professional career as both an athlete and as an entrepreneur is to measure what matters. Do what the numbers say to do. And I went and I looked at our top list of most listened to episodes, and I can count down and say, okay, well, what's our most popular episode? Who's listened to what episode the most? And I go to one and I'm like, well, here's one that was listened to a ton, but oh, this one had thousands and thousands of thousands of plays that were from a bot. You know, it wasn't real plays. And like, well, we got to throw that one away because it's an anomalous reading, right? It's not actual numbers. And they go to the next couple episodes and I see some excellent guests, right? Like guests that just have huge value and people really want to hear what they have to say. They have their own audiences. And what do we find right after those great guests? Therapy session.
Therapy session.
Therapy session. So obviously everybody needs a little therapy.
That's true. And wants a window. Like Esther Perel, she is somebody I love. She's an amazing resource. For those of you listening, she's a therapist. She is amazing. Her books are Mating in Captivity and The State of Affairs, and she has a podcast as well. Basically, I bring her up because she does some live therapy on her podcast as well. So if people are listening to this going, I want to hear some, what are people struggling with? Those real human stories and how people actually share doing the real work. So I think that's one of my guesses as to why therapy sesh would be one that would be listened to. Who knows if that's true, but I imagine that's part of it.
You know, the other thing I think that about therapy is that, yeah, pretty much everybody is in tune with the fact that they have their own struggles, right? We all feel challenged at times, and most of us are not going to go, you know how I'm going to deal with this frustration point that I'm having right now? I'm going to do an ayahuasca ceremony. That's not the default answer.
Totally.
Right? We're more likely to say, have a drink or go do our favorite flow sport thing, like go for a run or maybe just go in the garage and twist wrenches if you're a guy, or I'm going to be very stereotypical right now, you know, go take care of the kids and shut down on the thoughts itself and just distract ourselves. Or, you know, whatever it is that we're going to choose to like fall into a default role to just, you know, either escape what we're feeling or find some way to medicate or manage whatever emotion is coming up, right? Avoid the emotion rather than experiencing the emotion. And, you know, we're big proponents of psychedelics for, you know, embracing our emotional experience, but it doesn't start there, right? Like embracing our emotions starts with simply sitting with somebody that we know is a trusted teammate and saying, I'm really angry right now, or I'm really feeling stepped on right now, or I don't know how to deal with this, or I have these feelings coming up and I don't know how to process. It's just the simple acknowledgement that we have emotions.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah. And having that safe space to be allowed and encouraged to learn how to even express around them. One of my friends was sharing about how her therapist gave her a feelings wheel, and she is relatively uncomfortable talking about feelings. And it's normal to be uncomfortable talking about feelings. It's also normal not to have language to talk about feelings. I mean, sometimes as much as I'm immersed in this work and hashtag life coach and all that stuff, even I'm like, what am I feeling? You know, I remember I was on a therapy session for sure. And I think she asked me how I was feeling. And I said something. I can't remember exactly what it was. And she coached me to find an actual feeling word. And so it's just like, it's not the easiest stuff. Another resource, just because it's coming to my mind, is Brené Brown's book, Atlas of the Heart. It is a book entirely centered around feeling language. Like, it is basically an expansive dictionary, but written in her incredible style. It is really, really useful for those of you who are wanting to learn more about feeling words and learn more about how to express them. But yeah, the safe connection.
Can you say the title again?
It's called Atlas of the Heart.
Atlas of the Heart. We'll put that in the show notes for everybody, because I'm going to want to look that one up myself.
It's amazing. And yeah, Jay, just the final reflection to your share is the space, the safe space of being in connection. It is so healing to be safely held as exactly where we are. If we're feeling angry, we don't think we're allowed to feel angry, but to be in a space where we are allowed to be that full human self, you know what I mean, is a big, big deal.
Yeah, we just met yesterday and just one of our regular admin meetings. And, you know, typically want to start off a meeting with anybody, anytime you're going to interact with another human, it's nice to at least open up the conversation with, you know, our stereotypical cultural norm in the North American culture. How you doing? Right? How are you? Right? And we discard the actual value of the question and the value of returning the answer with authenticity and vulnerability. Because when we actually do that, when somebody says, how are you? How are you feeling? How are you doing today? If we pause, receive the ask, and actually give back how we're truly doing, rather than like a egotistical version of like, this is how they want me to answer, then we can be our authentic selves when we answer. We immediately set up this energetic tone that says you're getting the real me.
Mm-hmm.
And it may be, I'm having an amazing day. It may be a very average day, or it could be a really, you know, slightly below average, really below average. And I love that in our conversations, when we start off, if I open up a call, say, how are you doing? Say, I'm having a fucking day.
Yeah.
I'm having a shit day, you know?
Yeah.
Then so it sets up this authenticity that says, I can be the real version of me, and we can accept that, yeah, we have days that land anywhere on the spectrum, and that's okay.
Yeah.
That's just part of it. And I don't have to pretend to be something else.
Absolutely.
You know?
And honestly, I feel like that is a huge part of why we are successful. A massive part of why we are successful in this team that we have here, but also in the other spaces where we feel like we're capable, or not capable, but allowed to do that, you know?
So I want to touch that word successful, mm-hmm. because that, when I think about like an interpersonal relationship, I could be talking about, you know, my relationship with my son, or my relationship with my partner, or I could be talking about my relationship with my parent, or a coworker, or a friend. And successful is like, how authentic is that connection? That's, to me, the word, like how that word successful lands, mm-hmm. in that context is like, how authentic is the connection that I'm having with this other individual, and what practices am I doing on a regular basis, i.e. therapy and learning to express my emotions in a healthy way.
Yep.
So that I can have authentic connections and I don't have to put forward a, you know, a shell version or armored version. Or
absolutely. And I think it doesn't necessarily have to just be in long-term relationships like ours. Good, a great example actually is we were on the phone, and this is after you dropped off actually, Jay. We were talking with a future guest on the show, and I won't share who it is because I just want this to be a more private share. But I mentioned something about yada yada, my partner and I, this said something about my partner. You just used that word, which was what made me think about it. And this person felt comfortable enough and acknowledged that they felt comfortable enough with me that they could ask me about the usage of the word partner, right? Because I'm in a heterosexual monogamous relationship with my partner and I use the word partner versus boyfriend or spouse or husband or whatever. Not that that is it's a problem to use those words either. Sometimes I say boyfriend, that's fine. But why I bring this up is that it was a clear example where he was a little nervous to ask about, but he's like, I know I can ask Mel. Even though we had just met, we had connected and had been connected via text and had been connecting that way. But it's cool. I took that as a high compliment, right? And I expressed about why I use partner. For me, it's a normalizing of language. It's being in support of LGBTQ and how those words are used, and I want to make them more universal. That's why I use the word partner relative to my partner. You know what I mean? But it's the piece of that is more like, even in a very, very new relationship, the authenticity speaks volumes and allows a vulnerability that wouldn't be there otherwise.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And there's another, I've been learning so much about breaking words down to really look at what is the word that we're saying and why are we saying it? For example, boyfriend, right? Versus partner.
Yep.
Just remove ourselves from that for a second and just say, why would I say one or the other, right? Like, this is a boy who is my friend, or this is a person who is my partner. That they say very different things, right? A partner is you're very clearly telling the world, whoever you're engaging with when you say that this is somebody that matters to me.
Yeah.
I've partnered with this person.
Yep.
We are a team. Right? Where the other one says, this is a friend of mine who is a boy, or this is a friend of mine who is a girl. And there's the piece of it that sexualizes them, that says that they're a gender, which automatically sexualizes them. And then there's one that just says that they're a friend. And it doesn't necessarily, it actually puts them outside of a tier of commitment, right? Where a partner is somebody you've made a commitment to in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Even business partner. Anyway, we could go down that rabbit hole forever. But I do want to, you know, give you space to share and, you know, hold space and take space to share around whatever.
Oh, shit. You be careful now.
I know. Bring it. Let's do this.
Oh, man. What do I even want to talk about? I don't know.
Depends on the day, to be truthful, right?
I've done therapy quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the time I've sat down to a session and I'm like, I don't know. Work or my partner or my girlfriend or my family or myself. I'm going to point those fingers back at me. What should I talk about? And so this is like my own lesson to self. Thanks, ayahuasca. This is what I learned from ayahuasca. Specifically what I learned is this. Anytime that my thoughts are focused on another person and how that other person is affecting me, I'm avoiding the real issue, which is me, right? The real issue is me and how I'm feeling and how I'm acting or reacting in relation to another person. It's not how the other person is making me feel. It's how I'm feeling. And so if I'm sitting here going, Mel pissed me off the other day because, you know, she did this or that, and freaking Mel, and Mel.
Totally.
Well, you know, she was tired because of her thing, and then she was hormonal, and it's in her thing with her boyfriend.
Never.
And not once have I said, here's where I've placed an expectation on somebody, or here's where I'm feeling a certain way. And if I really back up, and this is what meditation has taught me, is to actually hear my own thoughts. And what do I learn in meditation? This is kind of how I try to approach my therapy session, is whenever somebody asks me how I'm feeling, I usually close my eyes for a second.
Yeah.
Even if I'm standing in conversation with somebody, it says, how are you? I like close my eyes and kind of look inside for a second and go, how am I right now? And if I answered right now, I'd be like, I'm kind of caffeinated. I'm stimulated right now. I'm a little kind of buzzy. I'm a little short of breath because I've been talking. So there's some anxiety. There's some like high energy going on.
Really?
My breaths are a little short. They're a little tight. That comes from the call that I had just prior to this meeting. I was like putting out a whole bunch of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel the need to sigh, right? And just acknowledge like, oh, there's something that needs to let go. I need to drop a tone. I need to do it a couple times.
Yeah, I get it.
There's a note that's just, right? Like, just how am I feeling? I feel like I'm not paying attention to how I'm feeling. I've got my attention in other places. So I feel like I'm a bit externalized. I'm lacking self-awareness. I'm lacking where my internal energy's at. And even just that little pause, right? Like that little exercise right there, I suddenly feel so different.
Yeah.
Now I'm like, oh, wait, here I am.
Here I am.
No, here I am. Okay, how am I feeling now that I've kind of gotten through like that superficial outside energy level? Huh. I'm great. I'm great. You know why I'm great? Because I've been doing work for a long time to recognize who I am as a person. I make a lot of changes to how I view myself, learn my limitations, and have respect for my own limitations, recognize like where I need firm boundaries around myself to protect myself and to be realistic.
Yeah.
And overall, when I wake up in the morning and when I go to bed at night, the guy who's doing that is like really proud of himself for the work that he's been doing, to be able to rest heavy and feel like I deserve that rest and I can do it with like the ease of a wild animal just laying down and going to sleep at night. No, I don't fucking worry. Go to sleep. Tired. Wake up in the morning with just like pleasant presence of, what am I going to do today? What do I want to do today? You know? So I'm really good right now. I'm really tuned into where my passions are and what is like deeply important. I'm going to touch 3 points really quick.
Yeah, because
this is something
time.
And I'm going to visually, if you're paying attention on video, I'm going to touch the top of my head. And my right shoulder and my left shoulder, I'm making a little triangle here. I say, mind, body, and spirit. Mind, body, and spirit. Where am I? Well, we touched on my body. There was a little bit caffeinated, high energy. But overall, my body feels great. Feels really sore because I've been using it in a really healthy way a lot. Been exercising a lot. I've been going to the gym a lot. And so I feel strong and sore and great because of it. My mind is a little busy. I've got some things I'm not quite clear on. I'm trying to come to clarity about some challenging decisions to make, you know? But my soul feels great. My soul feels like really settled and really back in charge. My soul feels back in charge, where my mind and my body were in charge for a while. Mm-hmm. I was really struggling with the body keeps the score kind of experience in life, where I was letting my body lead and my body wanted to medicate, didn't want to feel.
Yep.
And so my body was leading my soul's experience, because every time it started to feel anxious, it would reach for some coping mechanism, whether that's like a Krispy Kreme or a
yep.
line of cocaine or drink of something, or who knows what, it doesn't matter, it's irrelevant.
Yep.
In some way, my body would be taking control of my feelings rather than having my mind and my soul manage those.
Yeah, right? Yeah, big. I feel like it's an example of your skills at work. Like, and I'm not suggesting, that sounds almost, I don't know, not even validating enough. I'm not trying to, but I more want to point to that because I feel like you are engaging this situation differently. You know what I mean? And I'm sensing,
totally,
even with the frenetic, stressful energy that you have connected to other things that are going on that are external to you, that are, you know, triggering or whatever. But I feel like, correct me if I'm wrong, it does sound like you more quickly get to a detached place. You are more quickly able to take that sort of tight energy. And again, if you're not watching the video, I'm like sort of holding up my fist, like that tight energy of gripping. And it's like you're
gripping your face too.
Yeah, like you're quicker to be able to go, oh, I'm gripping. Oh, and let those fingers roll open and let go. It doesn't mean you detach in the sense that you're responsible. It's more like the energetic cord is not pulling you as hard, is what it seems like to me.
Thank you for listening. If you're receiving value from this episode, we would love it if you would show your support for the show by subscribing on YouTube, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts, and follow us on Instagram. You can click the like button, leave us a comment, or share the podcast with somebody directly.
Every month, we host integration coaching circles. These are safely held spaces for those looking to heal, grow, and connect in community. They are beautiful, alive. So much good work is happening. You are invited to join us. Go to trustthejourney.today/integration. You can join the Trust the Journey family, which includes these integration coaching circles and our private Facebook group where we connect and support each other. Sign up by going to our website, trustthejourney.today, obviously, and click on the orange Patreon button.
Now, it's your support and engagement that make the show possible. We love connecting with you. So feel free to DM us anytime on Instagram with your thoughts at trustthejourney.today. And now, I'm back to our regularly scheduled programming. 100%. And so, for anybody who follows my socials, you probably saw that I put up a post about a week ago-ish that was red, and it was angry. And it's a pretty uncommon share for me. I don't typically put my anger out into the world, because as a young man, I used to throw anger recklessly with just disregard for where it was landing, how it affected people. I just was so full of anger that was only one of the only ways I knew how to express myself was through anger. It's a bit of a misstatement, but it felt like that to me.
Yeah.
Right. It felt like I was just angrier all the time. And it was justified in a lot of ways. Fucking A, it was justified. My mom and dad taken away from me. I had my kid taken away from
me.
I had
this
brutal upbringing of, like, you know, being left alone and abandoned and just really hard, you know, things to go through. So yeah, I was angry. So fuck yeah, I was angry. But I didn't have the skill set developed as to, like, how to really recognize that I was angry or allow that anger to be loved and part of me.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted that anger to go away, or it it became all of me. Mm-hmm. And the only ways that I could deal with it was to like twist the throttle on my motorcycle to wide open, mm-hmm. or to turn the volume on the radio to 11, or to smoke that bong until I was fucking blitzed out of my mind, or drink a whole bottle of Jack Daniels. Like, those were all the ways that I was managing my expressions of anger, because mm-hmm. I didn't have even the ability to recognize that anger was what was taking me over. Mm-hmm. And the post I put up last week was me feeling angry about one of my friends dying. And in the last month, I lost 4 friends, 1 a week for 4 weeks. So it's been a bit of a hard month, you know? People that I care about, people that I love, every one of them hit my heart. Some really hard, actually, people that I've felt like tight connections with. And some of them are natural causes. Some of them are accidents, and some of them are suicide, and some of them are related to our sport, you know, or sports. And so there's all these different effects, but now I'm just feeling angry about the way things go sometimes, and that's okay.
Yeah.
You know, and the difference is that now, thank you, therapy. Thank you, meditation. Thank you for taking the time to look at my anger and recognize what it is. Now when that feeling of anger comes up, I don't, even though my body's got a well-practiced, it's like trained. I remember it wasn't that long ago, I had the same similar thing happen. I felt really angry and I was like, I just want to have a drink right now, or oh, I just want to, you know, get high right now, or oh, I'm just going to turn the music all the way up or something.
Yeah.
And instead I went to the ocean and I went surfing. And as soon as I was grounded in that salt water and my body was held in that salt water, I was like, all that anger was gone.
Yeah.
And I was just so calm and held by Mother Earth. Mm-hmm. You know? And last week when that anger came up, I didn't have the ocean nearby, but just even in saying and sharing, so this is the whole point of therapy, even in just picking up my phone and saying, hello world, I'm angry right now. I'm angry because of something I have no control over. I'm just feeling angry.
Yeah.
That process of expressing the emotion, of allowing the emotion out, is the opposite of depressing or repressing the emotion.
Yep.
Right? When we repress or depress the emotion, we become repressed.
Yep.
Or we become depressed.
Mm-hmm.
And so instead of going into a ditch or a trough or a hole, even worse, deep down in a hole of depression, I simply expressed the emotion that I was feeling and allowed that expression to become creativity.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Expression and creativity are interchangeable words, right? Like, these are, what's the difference between expression and creativity?
Mm-hmm. Right?
And so by expressing that, I'm able to say, here's how I feel right now. And that was how I felt back then.
Yeah.
And I don't feel that way anymore because I expressed it,
mm-hmm.
rather than repressed it.
Yeah, totally. It's so interesting that share. I had an experience recently where I was doing something that required my more full focus, my professional presence. And a person in my world was sort of in a more frustrated state, and is not necessarily relative to me or anything, but it was more like I could feel the codependent part of me wanting to and feeling anxious around, oh, I need to solve this frustration of this. This is quote unquote, oh no, like I have to do something to make this person feel better, that type of stuff, which I am proud of myself because I did not let that part of me lead. I instead expressed that I wasn't going to be able to do anything relative to that, but also allowing that emotion in that person to exist, right? It's not actually a problem that person was frustrated, just like it's not actually a problem that you felt angry, there was really nothing wrong with the emotion coming up in that person at all. Not one thing was wrong with it. And so I was really proud of myself for seeing that, for in myself recognizing that the codependent part is actually quite judgmental part, where it's going, that emotion is in that other person is not okay, when that's just not true. It is totally fine that that person is having an emotional experience that is divergent from my own, right? And I'm so proud of myself for the work that I did around recognizing, oh, that's my codependency. How and what would I do differently in this scenario because I'm in an emotionally safe place here with this person, is I can just simply point to it and say, I don't have the bandwidth right now to support or do anything around how you feel. Let me know like if I can help, but I'm going to stay focused in this other area where I need to put all my energy right now. And they were totally cool with it. You know, it's just like totally fine, right? Again, because it's an emotionally safe, healthy relationship. But I really want to point to my own experience in that experience of really seeing that codependency and feeling it wanting to pull me to solve and fix and all of that old people pleasing tendencies that were not necessary, that would have only made the situation worse for me and this person most likely. And I'm just really calling that out because there's no way in the past I would have been able to do that. I would have just enabled, I would have judged, I would have felt anxiety and stress on top of the other anxiety and stress that I had about the other thing that I was needing to focus on. And so I feel like that's a huge example of what healing looks like for me, is like in scenarios and relationships where I would feel codependent fear, where like a person I love is having an emotional challenge, and like recognizing that historically I would not let that be okay. Whereas now I'm like, I'm letting it be okay. So anyway, I'm kind of rambling, but I feel like it's resonant and sort of parallel to your share about your anger being okay. It's okay.
Yeah.
You know, and you're not deploying it in an unhealthy way. That's, I think, the big distinction there.
100%. Yeah. And there's something really, there's a subconscious effect of when we calmly and clearly are able to express what our emotional state is, or how we're acting, how we're experiencing ourselves at that time. And I've seen this a number of times recently. I'll give an example where one of my teammates was saying, he uses this terminology he said, before I say this, the story that I'm telling myself is, right? And so he would start off and be like, hey, the story I'm telling myself right now is that when I share what I have to say is that Melanie's going to judge me for it. Right. And I say this to Melanie.
Right?
I say, Melanie, I'm going to tell you something, but the story I'm telling myself is that you're going to judge me for what I have to say. And that immediately puts in place a curiosity for the other person. Right. Because then immediately Mel's going to go, she's going to go, why would I judge you for what you're going to say? Like, and the question why becomes the first question. Why am I going to judge you? Because you haven't shared what it is you have to share yet. And so it puts us into this mode of curiosity, which is an incredibly safe place.
That's Byron Katie's curiosity. Work, right? Byron Katie.
Yeah, curiosity is fantastic.
Yeah,
right?
I'll put that in the show notes too. There, she has some really powerful stuff about reframing. It's a question series. I forget what she names it, but this woman, Byron Katie, her work is really profound. It's in line with what Jay's sharing. So I'll put that for people too.
Awesome. I'm looking forward to take a closer look at that too. So I saw this recently in a few situations, both professional and then like, you know, romantic, really powerful use of the space to say the story I'm telling myself.
Yep.
like, you know, this is the belief that I have about what, you know, the person is thinking or feeling or what experience they're having before I share mine. But I want to bring this to, I used it in a professional context, the curiosity reframe. Yep. I was working with somebody and I didn't know the answer. And I was the professional, right? Like, I'm the subject matter expert and I have a client and the client has a question and I don't know the answer. And so what do I say is, I don't know the answer. Let's try to find out together, right? Like, let's be curious together about looking for the answer. And so if I take that same example out of the professional context and I put it in an interrelational, like romantic relationship or a personal, a work relationship, a personal relationship in the workplace. And I say, you know what? I don't have to have the answer to everything. I don't need to know, or I don't need to rescind to somebody else always having the answer. I can place curiosity and say, let's try to figure it out together. Mm-hmm. Then it immediately disarms. Everybody becomes curious and everybody wants to know better. And I'm going to bring this to the leading example in my life, and he's one of my personal BOD members, and I love him so much. And he's been on the show, so if you want to listen to his episode, Brett Kistler, wonderful, right? He hosts a podcast called The Art of Accomplishment with Joe Hudson, and we'll put a link in the show notes. It's a wonderful podcast. I highly recommend listening to it, and the way that Brett brings every single question that gets posed back to curiosity has been a prime example in my life of how I can reframe the way I look at my own feelings, my own experience. I can look at what am I feeling, first acknowledging what I'm feeling right now, and then asking, why am I feeling that right now? And not having to feel any judgment in relationship to the feeling or why I'm feeling that way. And that's the same piece that plays when you put it in a professional context or a relational context, a love relationship or an interpersonal work relationship or whatever. When you put that context of why am I feeling this way, what I'm feeling, why am I feeling this way, then all of a sudden everybody is authorized to be okay. It gives us all permission to be who we are, because all we're looking at is this concept of curiously exploring why we are who we are, not judging who we are or why we are who we are.
Absolutely.
And I love it. So thanks, Brett. Yeah. You've been a huge influence in my life. Thank you.
Thank you, Brett. For sure. A judgment cannot exist when curiosity is present. When real curiosity is present, we are actually connected with curiosity. Judgment is not present. It just isn't. And so that's a key tool to wield when we are self-reflecting and when we notice ourselves judging other people and externally focusing. Big time.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, I'm sort of like, what else can I share?
You've had a lot going on. I mean,
yeah, I have. You know, I have had a lot. I don't even remember, to be honest, what I've shared on the show and what I haven't shared on the show. To be truthful, probably not much because we've been interviewing amazing guests, and I actually really love another idea we had today for the show today, peeps that are listening. We were like gonna reflect on some of our past guests and what they've, you know, how they've impacted us, and just I like the idea of that sort of as a almost hearty acknowledgement of the people that we've been able to connect with and have shared so generously with us. Anyway, I really like the idea of that, so I'm excited to do it. But I do think that's probably part of why I haven't shared as much on the show recently, is because there just hasn't been that much space to do so. You know, I'm in transition. I'm in totes transition. As in,
yep.
I mention it relative to my relationship with skydiving, which, God, you guys, it might sound like I don't know how it sounds like to you. I have no clue, but I imagine on some level, those that know me or listen to this show, it might feel sort of like broken record-ish, like I continue to bring this topic up. But I will say this, that my relationship with skydiving is a very significant relationship to me. I almost cry talking about it. Like, it's a big deal in my life. And my relationship to the sport is evolving again. And I say again because there have been many chapters for me in skydiving. But I'm in another chapter with that, how it's evolving, where I'm like, I don't have interest to go and jump right now. I'm like pretty burned out, you know, like really quite burned out from the really significant level of work that we did over the last 4 years. Relative to the world record that we set, again, that started pre-COVID, you know, so I'm thinking I'm committing to a year and a half of training and stuff, and it turned into 4 years. Things I would never trade. Those experiences are absolutely have been life-altering for me in a really beautiful way. I'm very glad and grateful I did it. I wouldn't change what I chose, and I acknowledge that I'm fucking tired. Right. You know, I really felt like I had two massive full-time jobs for 4 years. And so that's that part of me, of like that high achieving part of me. This, as I in parallel am doing all this healing work with plant medicines and of course getting therapy in my own ways, coaching. I've definitely done some parts work recently too, Jay, which has been great. I highly recommend internal family systems therapeutic, a therapeutic approach. Again, I'll put that in the show notes. We've mentioned it a few times recently. It's really, really powerful work. And again, for someone like me who's done a lot of work over the time, very self-introspective, very self-reflective, and very, you know, skillful in that self-reflection, to be able to say with such sort of confidence that IFS is that useful is a big deal. But anyway, my
agree. I have to agree with that for sure. Having done numerous EMDR, CB, cognitive behavior, CBT, cognitive behavior therapy, and lots of different types of talk therapy, all different versions, I really found that the parts work, IFS, internal family systems, had a lot of value.
Yeah.
And I would recommend people, if you haven't explored it, it's worth looking at.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I mean, this is a sort of interesting detailed share. I won't necessarily share tons of details about it, but I did a parts work session the other day, probably a month and a half ago, and it was beautiful. It was powerful. It was like, I was in a pretty emotional state. I had a really good cry. But what I found, what I noticed was that I had this experience as a young, sort of young teen, where I was writing these like really sort of vulgar things in my diary about like the boys that I liked and wanted to like fuck and stuff like that. It sounds so intense, but right? As a teenager, you start to explore those ideas and you're like getting the sexual part of you is starting to awaken and this and that. Anyway, long story short, I thought, and I don't actually think this is true, but I thought that my mom, because I like got caught. There was a boy that came over to my house and I got caught. My brother like came home and said, You're going to be in trouble. And just like, it was a whole thing. Anyway, I thought that my mom had read my diary. And so I felt very exposed and very violated that my diary, where I wrote all these sort of vulgar things, that I was exploring this part of my sexual self and this and that, was, you know, was basically exposed. So I felt betrayed and all that. Anyway, I basically stopped writing those things. I stopped exploring that part of my own expression because I'm like, I don't want to be violated like that again. I don't want people to read this stuff. I don't want to be, right? And so that I got connected to that part of me that wanted to like express in that way. Cause it is fun. I don't know if you guys follow Boy McCoy. you gotta follow him. He is such a phenomenal, he's so funny, but he's also so real. He's this very spiritual, sexual, like comedic writer. And so I'll put it in the show notes, but I love his stuff because it's, again, this expression that you're playing with on the edges. And so part of my integration around that parts work session was to spend some time with this part of me that wants to write and express in these ways. And really, it's not necessarily like, I mean, who knows where it'll go. Maybe I'll write some romance novel with tons of sex scenes. I don't know. I'm open to all outcomes. But my point is that there is some freedom in writing down like words that you're quote unquote not allowed to say, that these things, these desires that you're not allowed to necessarily or have been conditioned societally that you're not allowed to explore. And so it's been cool. It's been good. You know, it's like seems like a little thing, but it's like, and there's been more deeper stuff around parents and this and that that I'll share about at some point. But like, that's an example of how parts work has been really quite useful. And it's just one part of me, but that part of me needs to be welcomed back to the table. She needs love and attention. And maybe as I journal this stuff, I'll be like, okay, I'm good. I don't need to write more. Like, we'll see. But the point is like allowing that part to exist, giving that part space to exist, and getting to know it over time and seeing what she needs, right? And maybe at some point she'll be like, okay, I'm good. I can rest now and I can focus on other stuff. You know, that is kind of how that works. And it's an example for me.
Can I throw an example out?
Yeah, please. I'd like to share
the stereotypical masculine North American male journey. So much stereotyping, so much programming, societal programming about what a man should or shouldn't be and how a man is or isn't allowed to feel, right? And men are so, from at least in my age groups, the age groups following mine, and I know it still exists throughout different demographics of culture, some less so now, but some more than ever, the idea that we are not allowed to be weak.
Yes.
Right? Men are not allowed to be weak. We're not allowed to cry. We're not allowed to feel. We're not allowed to show our emotions. We're supposed to compartmentalize everything. And I spent a lot of time working with enlisted men and women. And there's this, I mean, we just talked with Josh Wall last week about how the common culture is that you just repress all emotion. And you don't allow any weakness or any vulnerability to be shown, because, and it's all just about, you know, just armoring up, essentially.
Yep, totally.
And this concept is bred into men from early age through subtleties in programming on televisions and videos and movies and culture and context that, you know, men don't cry. Right? Yep. Men don't express feelings. And it's just not true, right? Like, men and women are no different as far as how our need to be in tune with our emotional body. It's actually a weakness to be out of tune with our ability to express our emotion. So there's this irony that the men who can't express emotion or who become overrun by their emotion become depressed or suppressed emotionally, no longer have outlets or don't have skills to be able to share emotions, end up reaching for systems to, you know, numb themselves or try to repress these feelings coming up because we don't know how to deal with them.
Yep.
Ends up in addiction, ends up in criminal behavior or violent behavior, or ends up in suicide, right? In the worst cases. And the parts work piece, the IFS part, is who's actually doing the talking in those circumstances where these emotions are being acted out in really negative ways are guards and managers, like parts of us that are protecting the inner child, the vulnerable parts that need to be allowed to express that they were scared.
Yeah.
That they didn't know what to do.
Correct.
That they were weak at the time, or they were unskilled to be able to protect themselves. Or here's one of my examples in life. Ooh, touches the heart right away.
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah.
When I lost my mother, I was 12. My father was already gone. When I lost my mother, I did not have the training, the skills, or the ability to take care of my little brother. Right? I wanted to, but I didn't know even how to take care of myself.
Yep.
And so I carried this guilt and shame my whole life about not taking care of my brother. And that part has like eaten a hole in me as a man. Like, I'm a weak, or I'm a bad man, or I'm not good enough. I'm not worth it. I have guilt and shame around this concept that I failed to look out for my family. Fuck, that's a 12-year-old, you know? But because concept is that I should be strong, that I should be the bigger brother, I should have this skill. Instead, I carry this burden of blame, burden of shame, you know? That's just a personal example of where that part of me, that 12-year-old boy in me who didn't have the skills, needs to be allowed to feel scared, allowed to be unprepared.
Yeah.
Allowed to be lost, allowed to be, you know, all the things that would come in a situation like that. And not the version of me that played out was immediately like, okay, I'm going to get tough. I'm going to be strong. I'm going to do whatever I need to do to survive. And I mean, I can hear a man on the other side of this listening, crying right now. I can hear somebody hearing this message and tears rolling down their eyes because they're feeling that so deeply right now. And that's you, and I hear you. You don't have to be that way.
Yeah.
That part of you that feels soft inside, that part's allowed too.
Yeah.
You're welcome here.
Yeah. Yeah. Big time. I mean, it sounds kind of like our two examples are entirely divergent, but it's the same thing, where like women are taught that they should be demure and polite and smile and all this stuff that we are told as women, we can't be engaged sexually and have lust and desire and those types of things. Those are not historic. Like, those are pretty much, that's the whole sex positive culture now. It's like Sex with Emily. This, again, I'm like full of resources today, guys, but it just things are just coming to my mind. Obviously, I'm like deeply immersed in this, in the healing work, and I want to share this stuff with you all. But that's why those kinds of shows are also so important. Sex with Emily is an amazing sex positive show, as is the Savage Love Cast. I highly recommend that show. It's so, so good as it relates to truly normalizing conversations around all kinds of sexual interest and preference and relationship and monogamy and poly and gay and whatever, like all of the stuff. It's all welcome there. And I think that's really beautiful and healing for a lot of people also who maybe have felt repressed or not allowed to explore those parts of themselves. So much stuff.
Therapy.
Good stuff.
So good.
There's always more I could share. You know, for me, the broad stroke on my therapy session is being in the transition, like transitioning in my relationship with skydiving, but transitioning in my life and my work. I feel like I'm in a big chapter shift. And so I'm being really patient with myself, knowing that what I'm experiencing is large. Like, it doesn't feel like just one acute issue right now. It feels like all the work that I've been doing to like grow and heal and choose differently, both relationally and professionally and all kinds of stuff. It's that those changes are occurring. My life is changing. It has changed. And as a result of that, even when we choose into change, there is discomfort. There is emotion, there is upset, there is all kinds of stuff that come with change, even when we want it. So I'm being really patient with myself and those around me, knowing that I'm in that. So that's really kind of the long and short of where I'm at.
Yeah. You know, I'm right there with you, Mel. The change is so powerful and it's so terrifying and it's so unsettling and it's so good.
Yeah.
You know,
totally.
As you said, you know, the chapter is closing. I literally just had this, I let myself imagine kind of closing a volume of a book, you know, like closing that last page. Like there's something about when you turn the last page in a book and the cover closes behind it. There's a feeling, and I think if all of us just like took a second and like think about that feeling of like as you close the cover of a book and you're like, that one's done. That's such a powerful thing of just knowing that that thing's done now. And just, but there's going to be another book, right? Like there's going to be another chapter. There's going to be another volume.
Yep.
But what a feeling that is. It's full of, oh, I don't know if I liked the way that the story ended and maybe there was going to be more. Maybe it could have been different, but it was great. And it was so, but what about that part was amazing?
Yep.
And, oh, that part hurt so bad. And it hurt so good. And, and there's all the feelings, right? There's all the feelings.
Yeah.
So all those feelings are welcome at the table.
Yeah.
That's what the therapy is all about, is letting all the feelings being welcome at the table and just recognize them for what they are.
Loving
them all. I love my anger.
I know. I have to share one last thing relative to what you just shared, if you don't mind, because it came up and I think it might be useful. Is I was talking with a friend about creative pursuits and being blocked around them and this and that. And the reason I'm bringing this up is that what I shared about that is I had to complete. So I used my book, for example. I had to do it and decide it was done, and it had to be out of me and complete and done in order for any of the next things that I would do in my life to be able to come in. And so like there's something to your point, very powerful about choosing to close a chapter. And again, knowing we can always reopen a book if we want to, but like choosing to close it or choosing to finish a project or put it out there, even though we don't feel strong or confident or don't know if it's complete or feel whatever we might feel around it, there is something really powerful in deciding that all the emotions will be present, like you said. But I wanted to say that because that has been very real in the microcosm of creative projects where like I have to just finish this even though I could continue to work on it forever. I could always stay right here and work on it and work on it and work on it. And that would block every other possibility for my creative future or my life future.
God dang it, Mel. Why are you pinging me with exactly what I need to hear right now?
I love you.
Oh, gosh. I love you too, but what the hell?
I love me too. I basically, everything I say on the show, I also need to hear myself. God damn it.
Yeah.
Well, my friend.
Ever-present mirror.
Yeah. I hope that you've gotten some therapy for yourselves out of today's show. And as always, we welcome your thoughts. Like, let us know what's going on in your world. What was useful? What would you like us to touch on in the future? We're really, really always open to hear that stuff.
Yeah, hit us up in the comments. We love to hear your feedback. Been great. Thanks for the session, Mel.
Love you. Thank you, everyone, seriously, for listening, for spending your valuable, valuable time, energy, and heart with us. Every bit of it makes a difference.
Yeah, thank you. We would love it if you could show your support for the show by subscribing on YouTube, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts, or follow us on Instagram. You can always click the like button, leave us a comment, or share an episode with somebody directly.
Like we mentioned, every month we host integration coaching circles. So, so much good work is happening there. You are invited to join us. Go to trustthejourney.today/integration. The Trust the Journey family includes these integration coaching circles and our private Facebook group where we connect and support each other. Join us by going to our website, trustthejourney.today, and click the orange Patreon button.
Yeah, thanks. It's your support and engagement that make the show possible. Thank you. We're here to connect with you. Feel free to DM us anytime on Instagram. We're at trustthejourney.today. Thank you. We love you.
We love you.
Keep laughing, keep loving, and keep trusting the journey.